What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We are live right here on Football Full Circle on this Tuesday afternoon on the Sports Grid Radio Network, Sirius XM Channel 159. A focus on the collegiate football space with some breaking news on this Tuesday morning. I am Ben Stevens alongside the mastermind of the pigskin, Joe Lisi, here with you on this Tuesday, FFC. And Lisi, the ACC says we are going sans division starting next season in their college football schedule.
Yeah, who said the Big 12 wasn't basically ahead of the curve, right? They had no divisions. They said the top two teams in terms of the conference championship would play, and all of a sudden, all these conferences, Pac-12 and now the ACC falling into line in 2023 are getting rid of the Atlantic and Coastal, and maybe we'll just see teams outside of Clemson and NC State maybe challenge for an ACC title next year.
And it will be so interesting to see how that all shakes out, because as we shared with you yesterday, as we were looking at Jaden Rashada and his commitment, the four-star recruit quarterback out of California, and the rumored NIL deals, although Jaden Rashada sounding off on that yesterday on social media, we'll give you that update in just a little bit. We were looking at the ACC overall, though, Joe, because Miami right now is the favorite to win the ACC Coastal Division. The Coastal is the weaker of the two because the Atlantic houses Clemson, and prior to last season, Clemson had won six straight ACC championships, five of those winning the Coastal. Of course, 2020, there were no divisions either, adding Notre Dame to the fold, making it a 15-team league, and we took the two best winning percentages. But the Coastal has been the worst of the two. The Atlantic has been dominating the ACC in years past. So now it's a very big wrinkle from what we will see this year, Joe, to what we will see next year. And especially from an odds perspective, Clemson is minus 140 to win the conference overall, but minus 220 to win their Atlantic division. Again, Miami, the favorite in the Coastal at plus 150. There you see the correlated paths toward an ACC championship.
It's all about trying to bring parity to a particular conference where we don't see the top-heavy teams like Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State just dominate the conference each and every year. Even though Michigan won last year and Georgia did win the national championship, at the end of the day, you want other teams to particularly compete with the likes of Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State. So if those teams have an opportunity, teams like NC State in the ACC, or maybe somebody else jumps up, maybe it is Miami, it brings a level playing field. It's not, oh, well, Clemson is undefeated in the Atlantic, so they get a shoe into the ACC championship game. Now they're going to have to play the second best team, not just in the Atlantic, but potentially within the conference, whether that be Miami or North Carolina or maybe Pittsburgh with Keaton Slovis that steps up this year or next year. That's what it's all about. You know, it's about challenging, and hopefully you get the top two teams in the conference playing for a conference championship, and then whatever happens, let the chips fall where they may, and then maybe you'll get another team that has value in the offseason, right? Maybe you won't get chalk each and every year. Maybe you'll get a plus 600 money winner that wins the ACC championship.
It's very hard to find those value spots to echo what Joe is saying right there when Clemson is minus 220 in one division, because when they're that staunch of a favorite, to have a long shot is great. Yes, if it hits, that's a great plus money payout for you, but based on the odds themselves, Joe, as you know, it's not a likely scenario playing out, especially given the track record of Dabo Sweeney and Clemson prior to this past season. Again, six straight ACC championships, the first five of those featuring an Atlantic divisional title as well. In fact, Lisey, the ACC went to this format, its current iteration of an ACC championship game, the Atlantic divisional champion versus the Coastal divisional champ, back in 2005. So 21 now in total that were not part of the 2020 year when it was based on the team win percentages because of 15 teams, including Notre Dame. So 21 since 2005 that have not featured that format where we've had the two divisional champions facing off. The Atlantic has won 15 of the 21, also throwing in Florida State's run of dominance in the early 2010s. So it has been very one-sided, and that's what we're looking for, not based on your divisional matchups, but just being the best team within your own conference slate. If you're one of the top two, you'll play in a conference championship.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. Just think about the dominance, like you mentioned, of Clemson, and think about Ohio State, that basically, would they lose four or five conference games over the past 5 years prior to last year? And how about Alabama? Prior to last year, Alabama, you want to talk about a crazy statistic entering the season? 43-3 against SEC opponents. Straight up. Forget the spread. Just straight up entering last year. So, you know, it's great for those programs, but at the end of the day, if you're the conference commissioner, you want to have other teams compete. That's what it's all about. Getting the best two teams to play for a conference championship each and every year. And just maybe we'll have that outlier that cracks the college football playoff.
And it's a great point that Lisey brings up right there about where we have seen conference championships take place. In the Big Ten, for instance, Lisey, the East and the West Division, since we've had that format since the 2014 campaign, the East Division has won all eight of the Big Ten championship games, including five hailing from the Ohio State University. We'll get into the conference championship model and what it just means for regular season scheduling up next on Football Full Circle on Sports Grid Radio.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
The breaking news this morning out of the college football realm, we break down for you right here on Football Full Circle on a Tuesday, Sports Grid Radio, Sirius XM Channel 159. He is Joe Lisi. I am Ben Stevens. In the ACC next year, Joe, will become the latest conference in college football to scrap divisions. The Pac-12 is already doing it for 2022. The Big 12 has never really had divisions, and they will not for 2022. We know the Mountain West got rid of divisions. As of right now, the SEC and the Big Ten will still have divisions, at least for the foreseeable future. But the ACC says starting next year, in the college football campaign of 2023, there will no longer be an Atlantic and a Coastal division. Just 14 teams playing a conference slate in the ACC where the two best win percentages at the end of the regular season will face off with a conference championship on the line. And we were looking at the dominance the Atlantic has had here, Joe, since we have seen them go to the Atlantic versus Coastal Division champions in the conference championship game since 2005. 15 of the 20 in this iteration have come from the Atlantic. Thorough dominance. We have seen it in other places too, like the Big Ten, where since they went East versus West, the East Division has won all eight of those years, including five from Ohio State. You heard Lisey mention it, by the way. Just a quick stat here that is ridiculous. The Ohio State Buckeyes, in the last nine full Big Ten seasons, have lost only five conference games in total, five in a nine-year span in four Big Ten slates. All right, back to the ACC, Joe, because it's not just about how you decide the conference champion, but what it will mean for our regular season schedules. The ACC saying today that they will adopt a 3-5-5 schedule format. What does that mean? Three permanent opponents that you play each and every individual season, and then you alternate throughout the other 10 in your conference here. The ACC has 14 schools in total. You'll alternate throughout the other 10 in a four-year cycle. Well, you'll play each opponent twice, once at home, once on the road. So that is the 3-5-5 schedule format that, Joe, I love because you have some permanent rivalry games that keep its stock within your conference slate, and you'll get to rotate through the rest, which can lead to some very intriguing conference matchups.
Yeah, it's let's dummy it down, right? We care about who wins the conference championship, how it relates to the gambling market, but we're college football fans at heart. I want to see those matchups, and I'll throw it out, Ben. Clemson hasn't played in Charlottesville, okay, in Virginia since 2013. Okay, they've played the Virginia Cavaliers. They played them in 2020, and they played them in 2019 when they had Bryce Perkins in terms of the quarterback position in the ACC championship game. Now this year they're not playing them. They haven't played in Charlottesville since 2013. Why? Why can't we see these matchups? You know, we talked about it in terms of the SEC. LSU hasn't traveled to South Carolina since like 2007. Yeah. Why? When's the last time Alabama played in the Swamp prior to last year? It was like an 8 or 9 year hiatus. So at the end of the day, I want to see these matchups. The tougher the road, the tougher the environment. You get a battle-tested team and you never know what could happen. And at the end of the day, maybe you don't get a glass Joe if you're the Big 12 that goes in or limps into the college football playoff and gets knocked in the mouth by the likes of Alabama or Ohio State, right? That's what it comes down to at the end of the day. We want to see the best product. We want to see the best matchups because we love the game. And then after that, let the chips fall in place.
It's a great point, Joe. And now it's not you're riding through your divisional matchups to maybe have an easier path to a conference championship game. You got to be one of the best two teams in your conference, flat out and simple. You got to win the games you're supposed to win and maybe knock off a couple of upsets if you want to get there. Not pay, for instance, like the Big Ten, Joe, like the West has been such an easier division to get to because you don't have to go through Ohio State or Michigan on years or Penn State. In the West, it's a crapshoot each and every year where Wisconsin and Iowa are generally at the top of the table. But a team like Northwestern, Joe, has been to two of the last four Big Ten title games because they have won the West Division. Last year, we weren't sure what was going to happen in the West until the final week of the regular season. Wisconsin gets upset by Minnesota. Iowa paves its path into the conference championship game. And, of course, that West Division now hasn't won a Big Ten championship game in the 8 years we have had the East versus the West champs face off in Indianapolis for that conference title. So now it's just about the two best teams, whatever those two teams might be, because we're getting rid of divisions. And Joe, when you look at the SEC last year, like Alabama and Georgia didn't play in the regular season. That would have been something we all broke out the popcorn for earlier on in October or November. We got to see it twice in the conference championship game in the SEC, and then of course the national championship game. Did we need it a third time? Then I guess, but there was no guarantee either of those two things were going to happen. In this kind of 3-5-5 formatting model that the ACC is going to use for its schedule, we know that at least twice every 4 years we'll see Georgia and Alabama, and we know that one of those times will be in Athens and one of those times will be in Tuscaloosa. That would be the marquee game on the schedule pretty much each and every season. And when you look at the ACC, Joe, we're going to see Clemson go on the road to Charlottesville at least once in the next 4 years. We're going to see those two teams play twice in this four-year rotation starting in 2023, and we'll have teams that have their permanent rivalry opponents, three primary opponents that you will play annually. For instance, Clemson's three opponents are going to be Florida State, Georgia Tech, and NC State. As it stands right now, Joe, those are three really good opponents. Georgia Tech may be the weaker of these three teams in its current iteration, but to see Clemson and Florida State, if the Noles can ever get back to that level of supremacy we have known for them in the ACC, to see that annually is going to be a wonderful thing.
Yeah, it will be, and it's about establishing rivalries, right? You mentioned Clemson. Right. Now, outside of Clemson, where's the pure dominance or the second-best team? I mean, you can make an argument on who that is. Is it Louisville over the past, like, 5 or 6 years? Is it NC State? Is it Pittsburgh? Wake Forest came onto the scene at the end of last year and was 8-0, right? They made it to the ACC championship game. North Carolina had Sam Howell. So, at the end of the day, it's about establishing rivalries outside maybe the top one or two teams. Because right now, when you look at the ACC, I mean, it's just a mishmash. It really is. I mean, who's the dominant team outside of Clemson and maybe NC State? Where's the rivalry for Clemson? Is it Miami? Is it Louisville? Is it Virginia Tech? Who's going to step up? Where's the other rivalries? North Carolina and NC State, Virginia Tech, Virginia. Okay, great. Pitt, Syracuse. Outside of that, do we really have those rivalries that we thrive, that we really want to see, as opposed to, like you mentioned, Alabama, Georgia, Alabama, LSU, Alabama, Florida? We tune in for those. But is anybody sitting back and going, well, Clemson, Boston College, I need to see that game? So hopefully this will bring parity from the bottom of the ACC upwards and makes it more competitive. Now, we said it before, too, Ben, the quarterback play in this division and this league maybe can rival some of the best out there, including the SEC and Big Ten.
The Clemson Tigers will play both NC State and Florida State this year because they are divisional opponents. Georgia Tech is from the Coastal Division, so now that will be one of the three primary opponents on an annual basis starting in 2023. A little bit of a wrinkle, but you could look at a team like NC State, Joe, and their three opponents are all going to be there along Tobacco Road, if you will, because NC State's three opponents now, Clemson, that's very difficult, and then you have Duke and North Carolina. Both UNC and Duke right now, Joe, are in the Coastal, NC State in the Atlantic. You guarantee those in-state showdowns on a yearly basis. That is going to be fun theater in the ACC.
It will be. That's what it's all about, right? It carries over into the basketball season as well. And I want to see how these teams step up. And this is make it or break it time for the conference.
And it'll be very, very intriguing to see how maybe a new rivalry begins between Clemson and NC State. Of course, NC State upsetting the Tigers last year as a 10-point underdog in Raleigh. They are the two favorites right now in the ACC Atlantic. Clemson minus 220, the Wolfpack plus 500. It is going to be incredible. More updates out of the ACC and college football up next on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We are back. Football Full Circle continues on this Tuesday. The Sports Grid Radio Network, Sirius XM, channel 159. I'm Ben Stevens alongside Joe Lisi, looking at updates in the ACC, a changing to the scheduling format, Joe Lisi, starting next year in 2023. The ACC will get rid of divisions. It will be a 3-5-5 scheduling format. Three permanent opponents you play on a yearly basis, and then you rotate on a four-year cycle between the 10 other teams in your conference. Five of those games at home, five on the road, and you play that opponent twice. So that is how things stand in the ACC. So, Lisi, as we continue going on throughout the updates within the Atlantic Coast Conference, we started talking the ACC yesterday about Miami's quarterback commit in Jaden Rashada, who committed to the Hurricanes over the weekend. And it was rumored from an On3 Sports report that Jaden Rashada signed with Miami based on an NIL deal worth $9.5 million. That, in fact, he potentially, according to this report, left $11 million worth of deals on the table when Florida came offering from the Gator Collective. And that was the big topic of conversation. The changing landscape of college football, what this all means for Miami,
blending the optimism of the future with the current reality of the present, taking the past into account as well. And it led us to an ACC conversation. But Jaden Rashada wanted his own statement on this matter known yesterday, releasing this statement on Twitter, Joe, saying, and I quote, "Any report regarding my commitment to the University of Miami is false unless I was interviewed directly. All reports of my decision involving an NIL deal is inaccurate. I would never make a life/career choice for any monetary value. As I stated in my commitment live on TV, I chose Miami because of the relationship I have with the coaches, players, and the direction the program is headed. I wish not to address the false reports again, as this is a time I wish to celebrate my college commitment and my commitment to my current team and teammates as we look forward to our dream of winning a state championship. At this time, I request no interviews. With all love, Jaden Rashada." So he makes his voice known on a situation directly, of course, involving his commitment to the University of Miami. It's all part, Joe, of this interesting landscape we're in right now, where the person cited in that report, Lisi, was an NIL lawyer who apparently represented Jaden Rashada in the brokering of these deals. An NIL attorney was not something that was even around a year and a half ago. So it's very interesting trying to suss out what is real and what is not right now in the NIL landscape, because everything is reportedly and allegedly, because some of the stuff even being reported, Joe, would be illegal even by NIL standards.
It's great that Jaden Rashada put out a statement. That's great. What I can't understand is why we're treating this kid like the second coming of Bernie Kosar and Jim Kelly combined. And you want to throw in Dorsey and obviously Testaverde as well? Let's do that. I mean, come on now. At the end of the day, I understand the want to get the four-star athlete. But what does this do to the mindset of the team moving forward? If you're Tyler Van Dyke, you have the team at 9-0 heading into that November matchup against Clemson. Does he turn around and say, you know what, you're paying a kid that hasn't even played right now for the University of Miami $9 million, and we know it's upwards of that, let's say. It's more than $2 million, right? That's more than what Tyler Van Dyke is getting right now. So at the end of the day, what happens? When do we stop it? And for him to say that when the lawyer comes out and already leaks that information, like, you know, obviously lawyers do, right? That if you can get Jaden Rashada, why can't you get another five-star recruit down the road next year and beyond? And now you have that money train going. That's why lawyers and agents leak that information, because they want to get the best athlete available because of marketability. Right. At the end of the day, okay, again, we're putting a lot of weight into a kid that hasn't played before. I understand where we're at in terms of NIL, and it's only going to get worse, but teams need to get in front of this, and more importantly, the NCAA or someone needs to get in front of this, because it's just going to be a train in motion, Ben. When does it stop? And when is enough enough in terms of money and the ability for potential kids to jump ship like Quinn Ewers and just leave companies high and dry?
Joe, I saw a great explanation of the NIL landscape from the CEO of Opendoors, who is a guy by the name of Blake Lawrence. This company founded in Lincoln, Nebraska. He was interviewed in an article by the Los Angeles Times about what NIL is right now. Because in its essence, or in its idealism, NIL is about players that are a marketable commodity that are given marketing deals, whether through social media, appearances, whatever it might be, because they are a marketable figure and they make their returns that way on their name, image, and or likeness. But it's not necessarily what we're seeing right now. So it's very smart of Jaden Rashada to get out ahead of this, because what is being admitted to by this lawyer, or what is being reported in this idea of Jaden Rashada taking $9.5 million from Miami, is not in its essence an NIL deal. It's more skewed to pay for play. The reason we can be so open in discussing it is because the NCAA failed, as they often have, and did not put any regulations in front of this becoming legal, which it did last July 1st, and instead is trying to play catch up, which is going to take them years to do, because the ball has already started rolling and it is way far down the field, and the NCAA is a sham of an organization. But what Blake Lawrence pretty much said, again, the CEO of Opendoors, the creator of that company that specializes in NIL and marketing deals for college athletes, is there are two different styles of NIL. There is athlete-driven, name, image, and likeness, and athletic athletics-driven name, image, and likeness. Again, the athlete-driven NIL is the idea of a marketable commodity in these athletes profiting off social media posts, paid advertisement, marketing deals, appearances, whatever it might be, off of their name, image, and likeness, and making their money based off their ability as a marketable commodity. Athletics-driven is what we are seeing a lot around the country right now. Boosters, backed collectives that have a ton of money, that love their favorite school and love their favorite team at this school, putting in a whopping amount of money to pay a player for, quotes, NIL deals, when really it's a pay-for-play type system. Come to this school because we love our athletics and play for us, not because you are some marketable commodity we're going to use in a marketing campaign or a social media push. So that is the difference. Athlete-driven NIL, which is what it should be by the letter of the law, and athletics-driven NIL, which is what we are seeing right now, but not technically illegal because they are finding the loopholes in a broken system because the NCAA did nothing, Joe, and had no foresight, no wherewithal to actually try to make any kind of impactful difference on college sports.
Right, and this has been going on for years. It's just that now it's legalized to a degree, right, under the NIL umbrella. This is what it's all about. And teams like Texas A&M, teams like Miami that are behind the curve in terms of the likes of Clemson and Alabama, respectively, are going to look to close the gap any way they can. And that's why it's good for college football. The downside, though, Ben, is the fact of the coachability of these players. Where do the coaches stand in terms of the whole system? And I understand why I feel sorry for coaches. They're making their millions. But it's about you. Listen, if you're buying into Jaden Rashada as being the second coming of all the great Miami quarterbacks in the heyday, you want him to step up. You want him to be able to progress from year to year. Okay, he can lead to Miami to 10 wins in year one, 12 wins in year two, a college football player. If he's not going to listen to the coaching, or he's not going to break down film, or he's not going to work his ass off because they lost a ball game, what does that say about just the game in itself? Where are we then? Are they actors? Are they entertainers? Mm-hmm. Or now are they playing football because they not only do they want to make it to the NFL, but they want to win a national championship? That's where the fine line occurs in terms of the NIL and these players making so much. It's not like we don't want them to make their money or their due, but what's the residual and the repercussions once they get this money? Are they still going to have the love for the game, whereas when they weren't getting money, they were driven each and every week?
You would still expect the love for the game to be there, but to Lisi's point, it makes it much more professional. And I say makes it much more professional, but in my opinion, college athletics, especially the big-time programs at the FBS level of college football or high college basketball, high major programs, even in NCAA baseball in certain points, the revenue-driving sports, especially college football, $1 billion per year revenue industry, when you look at the TV rights and you look at all that drives the money and the revenue in college football, it's always skewed professional. It is a professional sports organization, but that's what we're going to start to get more in college football. And there's guys being paid millions of dollars on the professional ranks that still love the game and still grind hard and still care about what they do. And so it's finding that balance that's going to be a little bit different for college coaches, and that's going to be the changing and the evolution of this landscape. My question is, Joe, Jaden Rashada, as we mentioned, a very talented quarterback recruit, a four-star commit now to Miami, the second highest-rated quarterback recruit Miami has ever had in its history of its college football program. And you mentioned the illustrious names they've had, Lisi. Jaden Rashada, at least out of high school, ranks higher than that as a recruit. If we're going to offer him $9.5 million reportedly, although Jaden Rashada denies that, if we are reportedly offering these big NIL deals to kids that are unproven, what makes that money worth it? The backers have that money. The booster collectives have that money, thus are willing to spend it on recruits to try to bring in the best talent. But if Miami is 9-3 and competes for an ACC championship but loses in the title game to Clemson, is that money worth it? That will be the conversation we continue to have, because we're only just getting started, not on Football Full Circle, but in the NIL landscape now of collegiate football. Another update in the Big 12 Conference up next here on Football Full Circle on SportsGrid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We're back right here on Football Full Circle on this Tuesday, the Sports Grid Radio Network, Sirius XM Channel 159, where you're listening to myself, Ben Stevens, and Joe Lisi on FFC. And Lisi, not just news out of the ACC and what their future looks like from getting rid of divisions, changing their scheduling format, but a big change is upcoming for the Big 12 Conference, who reportedly targeting Brett Yormark to replace Bob Bowlsby as commissioner of the Big 12. Obviously, a tumultuous time for the Big 12 Conference ahead. Starting next year, schools like Cincinnati, Houston, UCF, and BYU will join the league. And then, as we all suppose, in 2025, Oklahoma and Texas will depart the Big 12 Conference for the SEC. So an evolving time in that conference, now to be led, it is said, by a new commissioner, Brett Yormark, as reported by Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated.
Yeah, I mean, the conference needs to solidify this before next season, right? They want to make some noise next year with the likes of Cincinnati, Houston, and those teams coming into the conference. That's what it's all about. I think it's going to be a competitive conference. I think they have the likes. And we talked about this as well. A new commissioner brings new life. It brings optimism. It brings the ability to see into the future. Bowlsby was behind the curve, let's be honest. Outside of maybe getting out, getting the divisions out of way for the Big 12, he didn't take the lead in terms of this conference as a whole and put them at a significant disadvantage with their two most recognizable teams. I was going to say best. We got to pump the brakes on Texas. But Oklahoma and Texas moving to the SEC. I think this conference, 2 or 3 years down the road, can maybe compete again for a college football playoff appearance, if not this year. We talked about defense being able to lead and win championships. That's what we see in the conference right now. And now with the new commissioner, Yormark, being targeted, I think it's great for the game, and I think it's great for all the teams involved. And don't be shocked. They might have almost how many teams they got? 10? They're going to lose 2 at 4, 12? They're going to have potentially maybe next year 7 teams within the top 25 at the start of the year, possibly, depending upon how this year goes out. That's not bad to start a new conference with a new commissioner.
Bob Bowlsby dealt with a very tumultuous time within his conference. Of course, when your breadwinners, mainly Texas and Oklahoma, depart for the SEC, it leaves you feeling a little bit empty and a little bit open to what the changes might be. And the Big 12 makes far less TV revenue even now, and then you add in the fact that Oklahoma and Texas are leaving, than the other Power 5 conferences it competes against. Certainly the Big 10 and the SEC make the most. The ACC, third on top of that. Texas has its own channel, the Longhorn Network, on the ESPN family of networks, and the Pac-12 is a dumpster fire because the Pac-12 network was the worst invention ever by their former commissioner as well. So as we look at things, though, Joe, it's a very evolving time, not only within the Big 12, but as we just spent an entire segment discussing with NIL, the transfer portal, and potentially for college football, a change in the college football playoff process. We will not see expansion for quite some time now from that CFP model of the 4 teams we have right now. But Bob Bowlsby was one of the commissioners that was a part of forming that committee to make a potential 12-team expanded playoff field. He saw what was coming on the horizon, wanted more seats at the table to garner in more revenue for the teams within his league, because Cincinnati, who is going to be a Big 12 team upcoming next year, was a college football playoff part last year, a college football playoff team, I should say, and he wants more of that. But Joe, let's transition our conversation here to Brett Yormark, who is coming to the Big 12 most likely as their commissioner, as has been reported. from Jay-Z's Roc Nation. The COO of Jay-Z's Roc Nation previously was the co-CEO of Roc Nation Unified, a global licensing division within the agency. Roc Nation, of course, represents musical artists. It represents professional athletes. It has its foot in everything, or its hand in everything. And your Mark was the COO of that, but does not really have much collegiate experience as he takes this next step as Big 12 commissioner.
Yeah, I think the big thing, though, is entertainment, right? Marketability. That's the one thing UrMac brings to the table, is that you want eyes on your product. And let's not forget, Roc Nation signed Todd Gurley to one of the biggest contracts at the time when they did that, in terms of when Jay-Z took over the agent aspect, right, in terms of representing players. So the ability to get eyes on the Big 12, not just from a college football play standpoint, but to get them from a marketability standpoint, a sponsor standpoint, where they become a household name, because you're bringing in teams, Houston, Cincinnati, right, that aren't recognizable from the college football aspect, West Coast to East Coast. We're talking about everything in between, right? We know Oklahoma, we know Texas, we know Oak State, and maybe now we know Baylor because they won the Big 12 last year. But outside of that, it's bringing eyes onto the product. And again, they have a very entertaining product. I watch the Big 12 games each and every week. I love the matchups. I love the rivalries. And now to have a guy, even though maybe his background isn't college football, to understand licensing, to understand maybe NIL, to maybe understand what it takes to elevate this conference to with the likes of the Big Ten and the SEC, that's what it's all about creating noise and creating a product that potentially can crack the college football playoff outside of the recognized name Oklahoma.
And that's a really big idea, Joe, right? Because he has that licensing experience. And although it's not collegiate sport experience, he does have experience in the sports landscape before coming to Roc Nation in 2019, spending nearly 15 years with Barclays Sports and Entertainment, the company responsible for the Brooklyn Nets and the Barclays Center. So he has some of that experience. But in the ever-changing landscape of college sports, to have that licensing background, to know what it will take to maybe legislate NIL, or what this new landscape means, and to be outside of the box, is something we saw the Pac-12 do last summer when Larry Scott stepped down as their commissioner and George Kliavkoff became the new commissioner of the Pac-12, who came to the Pac-12 after working for MGM Entertainment, Lisi. So he brings that outside of box perspective now as the commissioner of one of the other Power Five conferences. Previously, Kliavkoff, the president of entertainment and sports for MGM Resorts International. So that's what you have. A couple of the leagues that are in transition looking to people from the outside. And yes, we are a football show. We discuss college football. As any of them would tell you, it is the biggest and most important sport in their respective leagues. But there's a lot more that goes into being the commissioner of a certain conference. You're not just focused on college football the entire time. There's basketball. There's other non-revenue sports that certainly draw your attention, and we'll see how that all plays out now here moving forward.
Yeah, it's all about content as well, right, Ben, in terms of that. It's all about content as it relates to certain aspects in regards to sports gaming as well, right? Let's not forget that. You know, gambling is a big part of everything with the professional leagues, NBA and everything else respectively, right? That's what it comes down to. It comes down to being able to provide content. So the fact that he comes from MGM International, a recognizable book as well, even though it might have been on the marketing side, you have the ability to expand from a content perspective. Maybe down the road, we've seen LSU partner with Caesars. Why can't a conference partner with a potential book down the road to provide content and analytical data as it relates to college football and basketball, respectively, to maybe increase sponsorships or more eyes on the product? Who knows what the future holds in terms of sports gaming? That's what it's all about, right? Yep. Bringing those eyes to the product. And I think both of these hires for both of these conferences right now is big, big importance to bring them and elevate them, because we know they're all after the SEC. Everybody wants to catch the SEC and what they're able to do. They want to take it down. They want to be top dog, and you have to do things that maybe take a little bit risk early on to maybe keep the rewards down the future.
We've seen a bunch of new faces as the Power Five conference commissioners here in the last three or so years. Of course, Kevin Warren stepping in for the legendary Jim Delaney in the Big Ten Conference. You have now Jim Phillips, who is the former athletic director at Northwestern, now the commissioner of the ACC. That happening within the last years. The Big 12 will have a new commissioner, of course, in Brett Yormark, as we are discussing right here. And the Pac-12, George Kliavkov, coming in for Larry Scott. So that is where things stand across the country, and Greg Sankey continues to lead the pack in the SEC. He has been one of the best commissioners we have seen on the Power 5 level over the last couple of years. One of the things from a college football perspective, Joe, that Bob Bowlesby was responsible for was reinstituting the conference championship game within the Big 12 at a time when Big 12 teams were being left out of the college football playoff conversation because there was no conference title game. Bob Bowlesby said, enough of that, we'll bring it back, the top two teams in our conference, because we do not have divisions. And right now, as we look at those odds, Oklahoma the favorite at 2-1, Texas the second best price at +250, Oklahoma State and Baylor tied for the third best odds, Joe, at +600. The fact we can even discuss a champion of the Big Ten conference from, or Big 12 conference from, this format is because of Bob Bowlesby, which brings us to the value here. I think Oklahoma has it. I don't think Texas has it. And if you want to make an argument for either Okie State or Baylor, I could hear that at 6-1 as well.
Yeah, and we talked about this last week. I really believe both of those teams from a defensive perspective are going to be there yet again. That can carry them to potentially either the second or best team in terms of the conference, and they could be right back there where we see one of the best games in terms of the conference championships that played out with a 6-inch result, right? You know, Desmond Jackson breaks that plane, it's a different story, and maybe Mike Gundy has an opportunity to be playing in the playoff. I agree with you, and we talked about it as well. I'm high on Joey McGuire and Texas Tech, Ben. Don't be shocked. Yep. I'm telling you, I know their win total is very low at 5.5, but they have Donovan Smith. They have Taj Boyd. They have also Sir Roderick Thompson. The foundation is there in year one. Don't be shocked if they're an 8 or a 9-win football team.
5.5 right now for the Red Raiders in Lubbock. The under having a little bit of juice, but Joe Lisi says that's not a fair team win total. Speaking of Texas, Joe, the reason we discussed the Big 12 odds last week was because, of course, of the commitment of Arch Manning on Thursday. The highest recruit rated in the 2023 recruiting class, one of the highest quarterback recruits in terms of rating ever in the history of college football. Joe, we also learned yesterday, Texas adding 5-star cornerback commit in Derek Williams to its 2023 class. He had his official visit to Austin just this past week on June 24th. He is Texas's 8th commitment since Arch Manning announced his commitment. So after Arch, they will follow, and Texas is doing a great job continuing that momentum.
Yeah, now Sark has to win football games. You get the recruits, you're expected to win. We'll see if it plays out this coming season.
A top three class under Tom Herman in 2019, a top 10 class the year after in 2020. These past 2 years have not been as illustrious, but not nearly bad by any means. A lot of talent on that Texas roster in Austin, and more to come. Not just Arch Manning, one of the top rated recruits in the history of the quarterback position, but Quinn Ewers as well. Three recruits with a perfect rating ever on the composite ranking of 27 Sports, 24/7 Sports. Vince Young, Quinn Ewers, and Arch Manning. We'll continue that conversation from a recruiting perspective up next on Football Full Circle as we get ready to round out the show.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We end
round out Football Full Circle on this Tuesday, live right here on the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM Channel 159. I am Ben Stevens. He is Joe Lisi. And Joe, we just discussed the run of Texas recruiting that the Longhorns have seen following the commitment of Arch Manning, of course, one of the three highest quarterback-rated recruits in the history of college football. Three perfect ratings, according to the composite rankings on 24/7 Sports since the year 2000. Vince Young, Quinn Ewers, and Arch Manning. Once Arch suits up in 2023 or 2024, steps onto campus in Austin, they will all have played their college football for the Texas Longhorns. But keep an eye on Ohio State. A four-star commit yesterday, also in that defensive secondary, makes Ohio State the highest-rated recruiting class in 2023. Pretty much, Lisi, if there's a wide receiver out there, wide receiver coach for Ohio State, Brian Hartline, a former Buckeyes wide receiver himself, is going to recruit him. He is going to get him to come to Columbus, and he's probably going to put up gaudy numbers just like Jackson Smith and Jigba did in the Rose Bowl last year and like Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson did before that.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, right? Get playmakers that could stretch defenses over the top. Hartline got two of the top recruits in terms of 2023. That catapulted Ryan Day over Notre Dame and Marcus Freeman. Now you got to win ball games. When you get top five recruits, you better win, baby.
Speaking of the Buckeyes catapulting, Lisi, Ohio State, now the second best price to win next year's national championship at 3-1. $1.20 behind Alabama at plus 180. The Tide move up by 20 cents. Ohio State leapfrogs Georgia from a 5-1 number to 3-1. And the Bulldogs, the reigning national champs, move back to the third best odds at plus 350. Quickly, Lisi, what do you make of that market move?
Yeah, I can't believe that we're talking about markets for a year out. We haven't even started this year. It's incredible.
Well, that's what I mean for this year. Anyway, we'll get into that tomorrow on the Football Full Circle right here on Sports Grid Radio and Sirius XM Channel 159. I am Ben Stevens. He is Joe Lisi. Up next here, keep it locked. The Money Line with Donnie Whiteside and Kevin Walsh is coming your way.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.